It's not quite around the table yet. Let me just mention before the motion, got a number of bills on the agenda, including three of these omnibus policy bills. And I know a lot of people here today. I'm not sure we get through the agenda, but we will make an attempt. I know, Senator Anderson, your bill is going to take a while, so we'll see how we do. So I think we've got the division report distributed. Senator Berglund moved adoption of the division report to Senate File 2830. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing Senate File 2830. We'll try to make it quick. Senate File 2830 passed unanimously from two committees, Policy Committee as well as Division. It has no fiscal impact. It has had no testimony in opposition to it in the process. It does relate to the legacy amendment in terms of definitions of some of the natural resource spending as well as the legislative guide. So we're here because of its relation to the legacy amendment, although it does not have any fiscal impact.
So maybe you just tell us what it does.
Yeah, what are we repealing?
The bill last year, the legacy amendment bill that was passed, there were some definitions regarding natural resource conservation in terms of protect, restore, and enhance, those were definitions that were came from the House. After a lot of consternation and last-minute negotiations, they were adopted. Since then, it has come to light that these definitions have made conservation practice difficult, and that has led to a lot of confusion regarding how we actually practice conservation on the land. The DNR has opposed this. A myriad of stakeholders groups oppose it. And so we propose to repeal them. Legislative guide was adopted in a similar manner. It was a guide that was proposed by the House. The language of the guide is a little weird in that it requires the legislature to adopt a guide for the spending of the legacy amendment dollars. And there was a lot of opposition from stakeholder groups over the interim and this session, and we have proposed to repeal it.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Senator Chaudhry, you said in general terms what it is. What specifically is it repealing? What definitions? I have read some of these things in the Dennis Anderson columns and stuff, and if you would just tell us specifically what those definitions are, because if I remember correctly, it's a way to fence out part of what we worked so hard on to get some funding for this last year or so.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, if I could bring up Mr. Knopf to kind of give you the really specific details of it, that would be helpful.
Great, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, what the bill does is it repeals a number of definitions. In 2007, there were also definitions for native prairie and grassland. The Senate passed a repeal of that last year, but it didn't become law. The House rejected that. It also repeals those three definitions for legacy bill or the legacy amendment. And what it does, enhance was one of them, protect and restore. And basically, they were put in Chapter 84. They also applied it to Chapter 84 in a number of ways that were unintended. But it does, the definitions of enhance means to improve in value, quality, and desirability in order to increase the ecological value of the land or water. Protect means to protect or preserve ecological systems, to maintain and to maintain active and healthy ecosystems, and prevent future degradation, including but not limited to purchase and fee or easement. Restore means renewing degraded, damaged, or destroyed ecosystems through active human intervention to achieve high-quality ecosystems. These have caused problems where they're located in Chapter 84 because they do apply, again, in a lot of unintended ways, but they were also made to apply to three of the four legacy funds, to the Clean Water Fund, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and the Parks and Trails Fund as part of last year. So what Senator Chaudhry is doing is repealing all of that, and also the native prairie definitions that the Senate voted to repeal last year, and then also, again, as he mentioned, the legislative guide. So those are all the definitions that are being repealed here.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, I apologize. I should have included that third repeal in my explanation as well, but we've passed that repeal so many times, it's
several times
become second nature.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, what's the practical effect of this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, the practical effect is that the conservation practitioners will be able to continue to use current best practices as opposed to these definitions in preserving, protecting, and enhancing. So, for example, the definition limits, let's just say you're trying to restore a native prairie. The definitions require that it use high quality, value, quality, and desirability, increasing the ecological value. That's a term of art in conservation. Ecological value is an extremely high standard, which excludes things such as restoring it to the ability to contain wildlife habitat. Habitat is a goal of restoration, for example, not necessarily pure ecological value. Another is for example, restore an area to a park. If you were simply to have the ecological value of it, it would make it difficult to restore it to simply to park standards. So we have all sorts of different standards of restoration based on the recreational use of that, a park, a forest, or that's used for hiking, or a wildlife habitat, or a scientific natural area, which would be the highest level. So what the definitions do is basically say that, in layman's terms, in a rough way of thinking about it, is what the definition says: you can only restore a particular parcel to basically a scientific natural area, a standard, as opposed to we're restoring this to for a pheasant or for restoring it for wetland or water quality.
Mr. Chair, just one more question. What kinds of projects would not be eligible for heritage funding if we make this, if we repeal these definitions?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, it's been really a source of big consternation because if we were to take these literally, if the practitioners were to take these literally, it would basically say that we couldn't restore a particular parcel to restore a wetland to look at water quality as a standard, as opposed to pure ecological value. I mean, in layman's terms, it's basically saying you have to restore it to pre-settlement conditions. Otherwise, you can't do it. And that excludes parks. It excludes a wildlife habitat, a pheasant field, for example, and all sorts of other things. So it's really difficult, and we're hard pressed to find any practitioner who has come forward and said these are good standards to work by.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me just try another quick answer to Senator Higgins' questions. One would be that I think the impact of the repeal would be that the Lessard Sams Council members would be able to interpret the constitutional language as they see fit, basically. And there would be no legislative definition of what the Constitution means. And one particular issue that I think, I know there's a lot of concern about the way the House wrote their definitions, and there's ambiguity, and there's a lot of people aren't sure what it means or what it would allow or not allow. But there is one issue that I think is important that I do think it would be nice to find a compromise on if we could, and that will come in conference committee. And that is the issue of whether protect can include something besides land acquisition, because I think that that's a fair point, that it should include some things besides the acquisition of land, and that's a fairly narrow part of the existing interpretation. But those are things that I think we can discuss and perhaps find a compromise on. I'm hoping that I have a similar repealer in my omnibus bill, part of Senator Chaudhry's bill in my omnibus bill, the definitions repeal, and I'm hoping that at least one of these bills will make it to a conference committee and we can have that discussion with the House.
Senator Chaudhry. Further questions, discussion on Senator Chaudhry's bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the bill.
Senator Frederickson. Senator Frederickson moves that Senate File 2830 be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion on that motion, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator
Chaudhry. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, members, next we've got Senate File 70, Senator Rest, and Senator Foley moves adoption of the division report. I should also mention that we have the committee engrossment in front of us that we're working off of. On Senator Foley's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And just would mention to members of the committee, obviously we normally don't take testimony in a bill that's been heard through a couple of policy committees as well as the division, but Senator Rest, you want to mention, and I want to acknowledge we have Governor Kui present today who's been working on this issue as well as many other issues, who obviously didn't simply retire from the Congress and the governorship to just go relax. So very much appreciate your being here today. Senator Rest.
Thank you very much. This chair is weak. Sit in it. All the same.
We're trying to save money this year. We're not repairing any of the furniture.
Be rash. Mr. Chairman and members, thank you very much for hearing Senate File 70 this morning. Senate File 70, as an overview, is a proposal that's been worked on for the last several years, studying and coming up now with recommendations for a different way of for members to from the legal field to enter the judiciary. In order to do what is proposed here, a constitutional amendment is needed. Right now, Minnesota has contested elections, and the proposal puts forward a ballot question, asking the voters to make a decision about whether they want to keep the present system or whether they would prefer to have a retention system that as a way of maintaining people on the bench and as a way of reaffirming Minnesota's impartiality on its courts. The sections that I think are of particular interest to this committee with regard to the fiscal note, and the fiscal note is in front of you. It's marked preliminary, but we have been informed, and I believe that Mr. Masman will confirm this, that the fiscal note is now considered a final fiscal note and not a preliminary one. I don't know if you'd like him to do that now.
Mr. Chair and members, my understanding is that the Department of Management and Budget wanted to add yesterday administrative hearings to the fiscal note, and so they sent them a request to look at it for what would potentially just be a very small fee collection impact that they would have. And so all of the other major agencies in the bill, the Supreme Court and the other agencies, that this is a final fiscal note and this reflects the cost of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mosman. So the sections that deal with the fiscal note are in Section 9, which has to do with a fee to for judges, and then in Section 17, what they are, what these fees, both for attorneys and an extra fee or a fee in addition to a filing fee for judges, what that is to pay for and why we have a fiscal note is all wrapped up in Section 13, which I will spend, with your permission, a couple of minutes on just explaining what this Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission is, and indeed an independent Judicial Performance Commission. It is established as a way of going about giving sitting judges a job review, and its purpose is to make sure that voters, when they go in an election to vote for a judge, that they have lots of information by which to evaluate for themselves the judge's performance. It also, the Judicial Performance Commission also is to aid in self-improvement of all judges and then to promote accountability of the judiciary. The composition of the commission is made up of 8 appointments from the governor's office, 8 appointments from the Supreme Court, and 8 appointments from the legislature. How they go about making those appointments and the length of their terms are different given the differences in the way in which the three branches of government operate. They the provisions on page 8 in D and E provide for the ways in which members may be either removed and or the appointing authority's ability to remove people for cause, including things like missing three meetings in a row. So attendance is important in these deliberations, as well as members who would not be who are not living up to the responsibilities that they were given as part of the commission. The commission members serve without compensation, and they may not be reimbursed for any expenses that are associated with their work on the commission. There are references to public and confidential and private data in that the commission would be working working under, and except where it is noted otherwise, the data that the commission has indeed are public data. The in Subdivision 5, there are standards and procedures that are set out for the the commission, and in Subdivision 6, there are descriptions of surveys that would be done, if practicable, twice before a judge stands for a retention election. Once midway through his or her term, and then within 9 months of standing for a retention election. The surveys are sent out to a sampling of attorneys, litigants, other judges, and other persons that have direct knowledge of the judge's judicial performance during the evaluation period. So it is a really broad swath of people who are asked to respond on the surveys. That particular data is private. The retention, the final retention year evaluation, again, is done or needs to be done within 9 months of someone standing for election. So it would be done in this year. It would have to have been done by January. The final evaluation after the commission has done its work Given a rating of either well-qualified, qualified, or unqualified, then the final evaluation of a judge does indeed include a public data and a public hearing and an opportunity for people to submit public comments on the performance. It also allows and the right of a judge himself or herself to submit written comments and appear in person at the hearing. If a judge is rated unqualified, that in no way prevents them from standing for election. If, however, a judge has decided that he or she does not want to stand for election and waives the final evaluation, then they may not be eligible to file an affidavit of candidacy and stand for the election. In Subdivision 9, the process is described of how a panel of the commission may act on the evaluation of a judge and the way in which the full commission either accepts that panel's evaluation or the conditions under which it may be overturned. So that is what needed to be paid for in this bill, and it is done through, as I mentioned, if you look at Section 9 in the bill, Section 9 is the section in law that deals with the filing fees that each public official needs to pay when filing for office, and for judges now, that fee is $300, but to pay for the Judicial Performance Evaluation Commission, an additional fee of $1,200 would be established for them. This is a fee that in the Judiciary Finance Committee, Judge Miles from the District Court Judges Association spoke. I don't know if anybody would say in favor of raising your own fees, but nevertheless, with comments about recognizing the necessity of paying for this new system and keeping in mind that it is independent of the judiciary. Its office is outside of the judicial branch. In fact, the office is outside of any other branch of government, not just the judicial branch. The second revenue source is in Section 17 on page 12, and it permits the Supreme Court through the Lawyer Registration Office to assess lawyers who are actively engaged in the practice of law, and I understand that is a term of art because we are not talking about all lawyers here, only those actively engaged in the practice of law, because as I understand it, there is some sort of graduated lawyer registration fee. The fee may not exceed $15 a year for those engaged in, again, actively engaged in the practice of law. And those, it is the commission that needs the funding. And it is the judges' fees and the lawyers' fees that are being used on an ongoing basis to pay for the their work. And, Mr. Chairman, I do have a couple of cleanup amendments that are mostly technical in nature that I wonder if the committee would consider putting on the bill.
It certainly. And, Senator, it's just a general question. There are, several states that have this system and a number of states that are considering a system like this?
Yes, we had testimony in the Judiciary Finance Committee. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the state that's most recently done this, but the, I don't know if it was Nevada or Utah. Maybe Mr. Brisbois could come forward and answer that question.
Sure.
It is a case that states reaction to the White decision in 2002 have been taking a look at the way in which across the country and the way in which their judges are elected or selected and have begun to make changes, including doing things like public financing, although that in the state of Wisconsin, where there have been millions and millions of dollars in extremely vile campaigns against one candidate or another, the Wisconsin legislature has undertaken a public financing approach, but it is still a subject of some controversy as they move toward that. But Mr. Brisbois can talk about what's going on in the recent and other states right now.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Leo Brisbois. I'm president of the Minnesota State Bar Association this year. In answer to your question, Utah, the most recent state to my knowledge that has gone to retention elections, that was in the 80s. There is currently efforts underway in Nevada to do this change to retention elections. There's a legislative effort in Pennsylvania. There's legislative discussions in Michigan. Arizona, which has retention elections for its statewide courts, which were enacted while Justice O'Connor was president of the Senate in that state, is now looking at expanding to all of its county courts or its larger county courts. So this is an issue that's moving across the country, not just Minnesota. There are in excess of 15 or 16 states that have some or all retention elections, and there are performance evaluation commissions in most of those states.
Okay, thank you. The Senator Rest has requested adoption of a couple of amendments. We have the A21 amendment, which looks technical, but Senator Rest, do you want to?
Mr. Chairman, this is a work of Senate counsel that had, these are some technical amendments, except for on line 115, page 11, to delete section 16. And the reason to do that is section 16 describes the conditions under which a telephone meeting can occur. And we made, this was part of the bill last year, but last year we also made a general law change to permit commissions and boards to do telephone meetings and the conditions under which they could do that. And so our section 16 is no longer needed.
Mr. Chairman? Chairman?
Senator Federson.
Chairman,
yeah.
Senator, right?
They're all good.
Senator Rest. And that last reference, that's not in the A21 amendment. Is that right?
No, on page one, on line 115, it says page 11, delete section 16.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move adoption of the A21 amendment.
Okay. Senator Fredrickson's motion, is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. And then, Senator Rest, I think we have, what, the A20 amendment?
And then the A20 amendment. For most judicial districts, the filing fee is paid at the state. But for Hennepin County and for Ramsey County, it is paid at the county. And so in order to make sure that the Judicial Performance Commission fee is sent to the right spot, we needed the language in the new language in sub 3.
Further discussion on the A20 amendment?
I move the A20 amendment.
Senator Ferguson moves adoption of the A20 amendment. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, that is the fiscal impact of the of the bill, and if you have questions about the fees, et cetera, I'd be happy to answer them if I can. And there are others here, certainly Governor Cui, Chief Justice Anderson is present, as well as others who could speak to the fiscal impact of this proposal.
I note in one of the letters distributed, I think I have here, the co-chairs of the group are Governor Cui and former Senator Moe. And
Senator
first time I've ever heard him described as among others here. Normally when Senator Moe was the majority, we didn't call him just like among others. But
I meant no disrespect.
He's hiding in the back.
But what Senator Moe has been reduced to. Senator Metzen.
I would just thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 8, you have the appointing authority from the Senate is the majority leader. Usually we do, or commonly do, the committee on committees. So I don't know if you've talked about that.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. President, we're trying to balance the appointments in a fashion that would be to what would go on in the House of Representatives, where it's clearly the Speaker not only as a presiding officer but the elected leader of the body. And then the minority leader, who, of course, is chosen by his or her caucus. I don't know that there was a
discussion.
A lot of discussion on making it majority leader and minority leader in the Senate, but that's been in the bill for some time, and I don't know why we did one or the other, quite frankly.
And certainly, Senator Rust, since this is a constitutional amendment, we'd have to go to the Rules Committee.
Mr. Chairman, the motion would be to, if approved, to go back to the Rules Committee, and the Rules Committee is going to be deciding, of course, because it is the home of constitutional amendment proposals, whether this proposal should go forward to the floor.
And could make the determination in terms of membership on.
They certainly could review this again. It's certainly under their purview.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I have a concern about the clause F on page 9, lines 3 and 4. The first part of this, commission members shall serve without compensation. I don't have any problem with that. I support that. But then it goes on to say, and may not be reimbursed for expenses associated with their work on the commission. Now, that might work fine for an individual who lives in Ramsey County or Hennepin County, but it doesn't work so well for a low or moderate income who may live in Rock County or Kitson County or Cook County or Houston County. You're just about guaranteeing that lower income individuals living in any of those rural counties would not be able to serve on this commission because they wouldn't be able to afford to.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Fredrickson, I'm very sympathetic to that view. As we were developing the bill, we were looking for ways to reduce the fiscal cost, and so it was determined that one way of reducing the fiscal cost was not to reimburse members of the commission. But I think your point is well taken, and particularly because Senator Fredrickson, of each group of 8 people that the 3 branches of government are to recommend to serve on the commission, only 4 of them, or no more than 4 of them, may be attorneys. And we would hope that most attorneys get a living wage and would be able to serve pro bono on a commission like this. But the other participants and appointees would not be necessarily compensated outside of their work here that would allow them to participate. So you make a good point. I don't know what that does to the the fiscal note, but there certainly is room in the fiscal note, by the way, to accommodate some change if you want to do that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, maybe we could have some discussion about this issue as it goes through Rules Committee and comes
to the
floor.
I'd be happy to have that and would work with Council to have a reasonable compensation for our reimbursement for members such as you described.
The only cautionary note with that is we can certainly discuss it in the Rules Committee. Obviously, we're not going to deal with financial issues as such there. Senator Rest, you're indicating that you think there's room within the fee to take care of some kind of per diem for commission members. And if that's covered by the fiscal note, that's fine. If it's not, it becomes
an
additional deficit and one that would be taken out relative to the judicial budget. So you obviously know this better than anybody else, but in terms of the bill. But
there is in fiscal year 12, there is to begin with savings of $117,000. So I think that would, for some level of reimbursement, that might be possible. And then fees can be adjusted in the out-biennium to cover whatever costs might be there.
Senator, as Mr. Mossman points out to me, with the fiscal note, there'd be a balance for the biennium, the next biennium, of $33,000.
Okay, I'm looking at page one. Which page should I be looking at, Mr. Mossman?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, the $33,000 would be taking the 2 years together. And I'm sorry, it's
$35,000. So there would be some room for at least some partial reimbursement for these 24 members.
And Mr. Chairman, to be clear, I'm not objecting that they would serve without compensation, but I think they should be reimbursed for expenses of traveling, for example, from Kitson County to St. Paul. I assume that's where most of the meetings would be, or traveling to wherever the meetings are. I think they should be eligible to receive some reimbursement for mileage and if they stay overnight, for staying overnight.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, one of the duties of the appointing authorities is to look for geographic balance, too. So that is specifically mentioned in the proposal. So I think, again, your point is well taken.
Further discussion or questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Relative to the fiscal note, was that explained? I understand that at least up to a point, there was no fiscal impact of this, but that there were some changes along the way in judiciary or something that caused a fiscal impact, and I wonder if you could explain that, if that's still in the bill or what's...
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, the bill is originally introduced last year, provided for Merit Selection Commission to review all of the... vacancies and appointments, as well as a performance evaluation. In order to forestall a fiscal impact far greater than the one you see before you in the bill here, the merit selection process is not part of this proposal. However, Representative Simon and I, Representative Simon is the chief author in the House, have introduced separately for discussion, and in fact the State and Local Government Committee will be hearing the bill, a proposal to consider regarding a merit selection process. Right now we have it only for the district court judges. So we decided that the most important thing, and that's where the fiscal impact came, even back then, was to have a full-blown and thoughtful job review group that was independent, or came to be independent, and that they did a thorough job, and that's where the cost comes.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, so to Senator Fredrickson's point on the reimbursement, is it as simple as it seems to me that what you just got done saying, Mr. Chairman, was that if we're going to deal with it, we should deal with it here in the Finance Committee and not leave it to rules. And is it as simple as deleting "not" on page 9.3?
It would be.
Well, that would certainly be one way to do it. It would leave it up to the discretion, I assume, of the commission, because it would then be maybe, not shall be, but maybe. So I assume that would leave it up to the commission to then make that determination.
However, we need to change the language here in order for the commission to make the determination.
Well, as I indicated, if we find in the Rules Committee that there are problems and it's not covered, then arguably, we don't address it.
So is the appropriate motion to delete the word "not" or delete "may not" and insert "shall"?
No, just do "may."
Mr. Tomasoni, if you want to make an amendment, you can. You don't need my permission to do it.
I'm trying to get guidance here.
Delete the word "not."
Okay, I'll move to delete the word "not" on line 9.3.
Right, and that would make it determined by the commission, but would allow the commission to do so. Senator Rust,
Mr. Chairman, I think that's just fine, and at least that concept. I don't know whether just taking out the word "not" accomplishes it, but it would certainly. There may be some people that serve on the commission that choose not to be reimbursed for expenses, too. And I think that we would want that flexibility.
Mr. Watson.
Just one other change in the proposal on my 9.3, delete "and" and insert "fund," but may be reimbursable.
I'll incorporate that, Mr. Chairman. Just
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Fredrickson.
Chairman, Mr. Watson, don't we often reference a section of statute that governs the reimbursement of expenses? Would that be included in this section, or is it unnecessary?
It's Chapter 15, Mr. Chairman. But I think that Chapter 1590 or something like that. But that is a really formal compensation dealing with per diem. Does not have anything to do with legislative per diem, but per diem for members, et cetera. And I think that we would not want to
go down that path.
We would not want to be that specific with regard to the language in paragraph F here.
And just relative to Senator Tomasoni's amendment and Senator Fredrickson's concern, Mr. Mossman was just doing some rough arithmetic, which suggested that if you assumed what, Mr. Mossman, about 20?
Mr. Chair, members, very rough arithmetic. If with the geographic balance, if you assume that 10 members were from outside the metro area, for example, at 20 days a year, and I don't know how many days a year they would need to be for hearings. I'd have to discuss that with the Supreme Court staff, I think, and others. But at $150 a day, that would be $30,000 per year for outstate members to be reimbursed for expenses. So that's just an order of magnitude if you wanted to consider that.
And certainly we could allow that. What that would mean is either, Senator Rust, as you suggested, the fee would be adjusted, or it does turn out to be an additional cost to the Supreme Court budget then. Senator Rust.
And I believe that particularly for 11 and 12, everything is covered, and we need to have an additional adjustment for the out biennium with the fee. The fee that would could be done could be adjusted later.
Well, potentially not covered for the next biennium if. If Mr. Mossman, you were suggesting, what, $30,000 a year?
And, Mr. Chairman and members, I have no idea how many days there would necessarily be hearings. I picked a number of 20, maybe 10. If it was 10, then there would be enough money in the bill right now to cover those costs.
And obviously it's not a huge amount, but Senator Rust.
No, I understand, Mr. Chairman.
You know, it becomes some additional part of a TALES budget, potentially, if passed through this legislature, if passed by the voters. And implemented the next biennium. So we have Senator Tomasoni. And Senator Tomasoni, were you incorporating Mr. Watson's?
Yes.
Okay, so we have Senator Tomasoni, Senator Foley.
Mr. Chairman, I would object to taking any money from the court's budget and look for some other source. It seems to me that unless some other revenue is laid out there, that the court is really in dire straits anyhow.
Well, and that's why I raised the concern, Senator Foley. So, Senator Rust, maybe before we vote on Senator Tomasoni's amendment, again, Mr. Mossman has done this in a quick way.
Sure.
You know, are you comfortable with the fee structure? Do you wish to have somebody like Ms. Dozell testify on this, or?
Mr. Chairman, I'm confident that we can, that the fee that's here can cover it, but I am curious, where in the proposal does it say that the courts would have to cover the costs, and this is a totally independent group?
Well, I guess it doesn't say anything in the proposal, but I assume because it's part of the judicial budget.
Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, no, it's not.
The first,
not at all.
Is it?
Obviously, the first 2 years are covered with the income, and then if you need to up the 20, is there anything?
Well, under Mr. Mossman's hypothetical.
It's a special revenue account that is outside of the judicial budget, Mr. Chairman. And it is an independent office with its own staff, and that was a very important part of independent, not just of the judiciary, but of the legislature and the governor's office or the administration.
Mr. Chair, perhaps I haven't been paying close enough attention, but does this affect all sitting judges as well as ones that will be appointed into the future after the amendment is passed?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, there is a transition period, and they are referenced in the bill, and that's referenced in the bill so that any sitting judge can fulfill the term that they are currently serving at this time.
So
it would only be the next when their term ends.
So, Mr. Chair, the cost, that certainly affects the costs for retention if the new judges are being appointed as that comes out, or the existing judge starts a new term, there's going to be a period of time where that retention, the panel making those evaluations, won't be operable. If it doesn't immediately start for when current judges come up for re-election, or does it?
There is. The judges who are currently serving their six-year terms get to serve their six-year terms, but mm-hmm. if they're going to
continue
stand for election at the end of that six-year period, they would be involved in the evaluation
that was my
process.
Question.
So
thank
there
you.
There is a orderly way of proceeding, and then the term of office is extended to 8 years rather than six.
We have Senator Tomasoni's motion in front of us. Mr. Watson?
May I just restate the motion? We were going to include a reference to the section as well?
No.
I guess not.
No? So okay. Then the amendment is on page 9, line 3, delete and 35.
Senator Tomasoni?
That's correct.
All right, we have Senator Tomasoni's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion?
Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rust, what's wrong with the current way we pick judges?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Tomasoni, thank you for that question. Minnesota has a reputation, as you're well aware, of having a very high-quality judiciary. But since the 2002 White decision, we have, I think, become aware that the system that we have currently of contested elections, where candidates for the bench can raise contributions in their own names, where they can have a political party endorsement, where they are able to express opinions on issues before the court, either as a sitting judge or as one who wants to become a judge, who is not currently a judge. And what has happened across the country is that those kinds of campaigns and those kinds of contested elections have brought out, quite frankly, the worst in human nature, and vicious attacks on people, very close by over in Wisconsin, where a candidate for the Supreme Court was attacked untruthfully. Attacked for allegedly releasing a convicted rapist from prison, and actually that was untrue. That hadn't happened. But, you know, sometimes lies are so big that people have a hard time not believing them, and that was a huge issue in that election. In West Virginia, there was, which have contested elections, there was a contributor who was the head of a corporation who had a case before the court that he put all of his money into the one candidate's campaign committee for the expressed reason of electing that person to the Supreme Court so that he would rule favorably, because otherwise the bench was split, rule favorably on behalf of that corporation. And that is indeed exactly what happened. That person won. The case was settled with that vote of that judge, who, quite frankly, had been bought for the West Virginia Supreme Court. And the Citizens for Impartial Courts have had a growing concern that we will end up with a huge, ugly campaign in the near future in Minnesota that will turn our courts just on their heads. And this proposal is one that does not make that change in statute. We can't do it in statute, but it will allow the people of Minnesota to decide whether the contested elections that we have now are the best way to promote and maintain and reaffirm the impartiality of our courts, or whether a retention election is a better way to stave off those kinds of elections that we've seen that have really destroyed confidence in the judiciary and in other states. And perhaps people will decide that Minnesota will never be that way. And if they have this question before them, they will vote no. That remains to be seen.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
It seems to me we're injecting even more politics into the process through all the various appointments. Now, I mean, there will be 12 lawyers on the commission well, that's the maximum that can be there.
Right.
I realize Governor Cui probably would be very fair at his appointments, but I know that some governors might not. And there's and it appears that the commission has the potential to be very political. And who knows, maybe all those lawyers that are on there would want to be judges, and who knows what kind of judgment they would give toward the judges that they're assessing. I'm afraid that it makes this process even more political than what you're saying right now. And there are elections, and so since there are elections, what keeps the problem from happening that you just stated?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Tomassoni, I thank you for your comment. I do think that within the Section 13, whatever the number it is, within Section 13, there are checks and balances for the over the behavior of members of the commission, and particularly in lines 828 through 831, where members are required to perform their duties in an impartial and objective manner and basing their recommendations solely upon matters that are in the record, the public record developed by the commission, and a member who violates the paragraph, this paragraph, may be removed from the commission by a majority vote of the commission's membership. I think that's also an accountability measure, as well as the accountability measures that are present for the appointing authorities if members abuse the privilege that they're given on this performance evaluation commission. And, you know, whether there is more politics or less politics, there is always politics in an election of any kind, and I would be the first to acknowledge that.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's that got to do with the money in the bill?
Well, I was just answering his question.
I know, Senator, but Mr. Chairman, we need to move along.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I'm not just voting on the money. I'm voting on the whole bill.
Nope, Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomassoni, that's fine. We can have that discussion on the floor then.
Senator Murphy, it's always appropriate to ask questions about the bill and what's in a bill. In fact, as we get to some of these later bills, we'll probably have policy discussion, I bet. Further questions for Senator West or Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill.
Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 70 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator West.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the hard work.
Okay, next we're going to start with the policy bills, and so we'll have a chance to get into Senator Murphy's larger point. Let me just indicate to members as we begin that, these are, there's some degree of ambiguity. We've had, I'm sorry, Senator Scogin, before we get to the policy bills, I was so anxious to get to them. Oh, is it? Okay.
It's quite a coalition.
I'm sorry. Yes. Okay. So it is appropriate as we get to Senator Scogin. We've had this discussion of having omnibus policy bills put together in finance divisions. And so we've got four bills on the agenda. I'm not sure if we have other, I don't think we have other bills coming through the divisions.
We have a game and fish bill, Mr. Chair, that
okay.
Has yet to come.
Okay, so it certainly creates some degree of ambiguity relative to policy amendments and policy discussion when these are policy bills put together in the Finance Committee. But we'll try to, you know, address this as best we can. So let's start out with Senator Scogin. Senator Vickerman moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. If I could start with a policy issue, I have a small oral amendment I would be asking someone to offer.
in Section 13, members. We developed Section 13 based on how we deal with counties and how they work with county extension as well as 4-H, and we found that it became a little bit cumbersome for cities to operate under those same rules. And if I believe it's 630, page 6, line 30 and 31, we need to take out three words to help the cities become part of the process with extension work. And I would ask someone to move that we delete incur expenses on line 30 and the word and on line 31, so the sentence would read, supervisors of any town may spend money for county extension work.
I'll move that, Mr. Chairman.
All right, on Senator Murphy's motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Scogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we have the Ag and Agriculture and Veterans Affairs omnibus bill before you. And as far as finances on it, I would take you to Section 9, the tree care registration provision, pages 4 and 5. This is something the department brought, and they were trying to control just anybody firing up a chainsaw and driving into an area where maybe a storm had occurred and claiming that they were a tree trimming company. This is going to require those who advertise their service to be registered, and the department did see that there would be a small cost to them to issue these licenses and to do some checking to make sure that they're properly registered and advertising their services. See a fiscal note there of projected about $35,000.
Mr. Chairman, what?
Senator
Scogan, where is that in the bill?
It's Section 9.
Bottom of page 4.
Bottom of page 4 and top of page 5.
Okay, and Senator Scogan, is there?
Just pointing out where you might.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if you'd rather just ask questions, we can.
Okay, well, I guess I'd like to have some discussion of the bill. Again, as I mentioned when we started, we've fallen into this habit of having omnibus policy bills put together in finance divisions, then brought to the full committee. That being the case, you know, it seems to me it's more appropriate than it might be otherwise to have the policy discussion here in the full committee. So I'd like to have
Mr. Chair, I could quickly walk you through the sections and then maybe highlight when we get to a fiscal concern or
sure, if you could just offer not in excessive detail because it obviously spent time in division, but some sense of what's in the bill.
Sir, sections 1 and 2, this is compensation for livestock that's destroyed by gray wolves. Senator Stumpf brought us this one, Mr. Chair. This is also talks about who can be involved in the investigation and what that investigation might include, including pictures and also opens the door for others like the University Extension agent to come out and take a look at where a gray wolf may have taken some livestock. Section 3 directs the Commissioner of Agriculture to have a goal of issuing permits within 150 days. We've certainly asked for some quicker permitting in this state. This is driven toward having them do that and then providing some semi-annual progress reports to the legislature. Section 4 is Senator Koch's provision to classify horses as livestock. Some pesticide and food handling technical changes were made in Sections 5, 6, 7, and 8, and Section 10. Senator Dill brought those to us as recommended by the Department of Agriculture. Section 9 is that tree care registration provision that I talked about, that the department would be registering those who commercially are going to be cutting trees. Section 11 and 12 is giving the department and the animal, the Board of Animal Health flexibility in creating bovine tuberculosis TB zones and flexibility on what that might include. In Section 13, where we just made the oral amendment, this allows cities and counties to work closer with the county extension, including 4-H, and to spend some money on those. That was a Senator Saltzman provision. Section 14 and 15 in the bill is enforcement of the bulk firewood sales. As you know, the Department of Natural Resources concerned about moving invasive species throughout the state of Minnesota. through the use of bulk firewood. This, of course, is going to, if there's a beyond a certain amount, I believe they have to be ticketed, tagged, and the destination or the origination spot of that wood would have to be acknowledged. Section 1718 and Section 23 talk about foreign ownership of wind rights and unused wind rights. Senator Pretner Solon brought us that, allowing for foreign ownership of easements to move in and develop wind power. And Section 19 contains some limited exemption for nonprofits who want to get into farming and turn some of those profits back into their, I guess, their mission statement. And Senator Dill brought us that as it was modified in committee. Temporary livestock production input liens. Senator Vickerman brought us this. This is Sections 20 and 22. This is an attempt as a farmer may experience financial difficulty and have livestock on his place. The feed company or the elevator that is providing that feed is going to be required to continue to feed those animals even as the farmer goes through some financial problems. And it will keep the animals healthy, and it will also give a lien for the elevator or the feed company to make sure that they can get in line to recoup some of their costs of providing feed to those animals during that process. Then we go to Sections 24, 25, and 26. These will be 24 is the Fertilizer Research Grant Appropriation Extension. This one you'll notice, Mr. Chair, on your spreadsheet or your fiscal note. This is not a new appropriation. It just is going to delay the amount of when the money actually gets appropriated. Section 25 is directing the commissioner to work with stakeholders in the dairy industry as well as at our university systems to develop a dairy research and education facility and get back to the legislature with a report. Section 26 is a Rosen Amendment on Terminal Capacity Study that would appropriate $50,000 to do a study to get a better handle on how much propane and anhydrous ammonia we have. There seems to be some concern about whether or not we are going to have enough to sustain the agricultural industry when we get out into 2020 or it's out about 10 years, and this is a study that's going to give us a better handle on where we sit with that. Other than that, we have a couple of repealers. Section 27, native grasses and wildflower seed production loans have not been used, and was recommended that we repeal that. And Senator Dill brought us the repealer to require a blanket to be put on clipped animals that are sheared when the weather is still cold in Minnesota. We had a provision in law that some farmers that sheared their animals were violating state law by not blanketing them when they put them back out in the pasture, and Senator Dill found that to be cumbersome as well as illegal for many farmers, and in one of his last acts on the Ag Committee, got that repealed. So,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin, will this make Senator Dill legal with his sheep?
Well, I think Senator Dill has three blankets, and he has been trying to rotate them out there to keep them warm. Senator Dill may want to comment on that.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I've been legal ever since Governor Polanyi became governor, and it's because he always keeps us here until the constitutional deadline. And so I have to shear my sheep about after May 1st, and if you would just let us out of here on time, I would shear before May 1st, and that would make me illegal because I'd have to put a blanket on them after I let them outside.
Well, so. Mr. Chair, as a non-farmer, I mean, I know when you give your dog a really close haircut, sometimes you want them to wear a little coat for a few days.
Well, Mr. Knopf.
What happens to the sheep if it's really cold and there's no blanket?
Doggy coat.
I mean,
what the law says now is if you shear them between November 1st and May 1st, and it's more than 60 days before May 1st, or 60 days since shearing, you have to put a blanket on them if you let them outside. Now, Mr. Knopf told me that he leads his dog downtown and gets his hair cut and brings him home on a leash without a coat on or a blanket. So that makes Mr. Knopf illegal.
No, dogs don't count.
So So, Mr. Chair, I guess, Senator Dill, you're saying it's kind of survival of the fittest and the lambs that, I mean, they're
well,
fine?
Well,
they're going to be
here's
fine?
Here's what the problem is. Before a ewe lambs, it's nice to get the wool off of them so the lamb can find a nipple without getting confused with all that wool hanging down there. And it also takes up less space in the barn if you get the wool off the sheep before they lamb. It's a lot cleaner. But according to this law, if you let them outside before May 1st and they've been sheared within 60 days of that period of time, you're illegal. And remember how warm it was in March? What you would want to go outside with a blanket on in March when it was so nice out?
But, Senator Dill, to some extent this is a hypothetical because next year you're going to have all the time you need.
Well, next year, if this passes, I'll be legal.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, anybody who raises sheep should have enough good sense to know how to handle them. They're without having to the wisdom of the legislature telling them what to do.
Mr. Chair, if we go to Article 2, if we're done with the sheep sheep stories. Article 2 is the veterans portion, section 1 through 6, 8 and 10, talks about county veteran service officers and the responsibilities that they would have for the administration of those officers and how an assistant service officer may be included in that. And then Section 7, that came to us, by the way, from Senator Erickson Ropes. And then Section 7 from Senator Bonoff was amended by the Senate. This is a definition of deceased veteran. This helps families that have lost a loved one and allows Minnesota residents to receive post-secondary education and some educational assistance. And Senator Bonoff just had a piece that cleaned that up for us a little bit. And a couple of repealers there. The Disabled American Veteran License Plate was repealed by Senator Ingebretson. This is a license plate that is not used mostly because we have all kinds of other license plates for veterans, and they seem to fall into one of those other categories. So this is one that they were not taking advantage of. We've repealed that. And the other one, under the request by the department, they did a study on possible construction project priority listings, and they asked us after their study to remove the Wilmer project from their priority list. So we did that for them. And I would stand for questions.
Pierce Colgan, Article 1, Section 16. I'm trying to remember, wasn't this in the, I think it was in the Supplemental Finance Bill?
I'm sorry, I missed that one, Mr. Chair.
On page 8, section 16.
Oh, this was Senator Phoebe's provision to, on the Green Acres provision, to extend from May to August the time period for people to pull the trigger on opting out.
Yeah, but if I think it's already law at this point.
Yeah, I think she had a placeholder in a couple places, and this one
so is there
happens to be in.
Any reason to keep this section in the bill?
None that I see. I apologize for that. I didn't see that one.
Oh, no.
So, Mr. Mueller or Mr. Knopf, let me just make sure that.
It was signed into law.
That I believe the governor has signed it, Mr. Chair.
Well, let's. Senator Olson moves the deletion of Section 16. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Other questions, discussion for Senator Scogan? Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scogan, on the tree service registration, how does this affect any local municipalities who might license tree service companies?
Separate from the state licensing them?
Yeah. I don't know if there are any, but...
Mr. Knopf, you can maybe help me with that. But
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Higgins, as far as I know, this is just a registration with the state. The main reason the state wants to or does this, actually under current law, they are required to be registered. What we're doing now is charging a fee and giving them a registration, but it shouldn't affect the local unit of government that wants to license people that are involved in taking care of trees.
Just
state's interested in knowing who they are, Senator.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I totally get it. I just didn't know whether it would preempt the
it should not.
Local governments.
It should not.
Further discussions or
Mr. Chair,
questions?
Is it time to move the bill?
If
it is, I will.
So choose. Senator Higgins moves Senate File 2737 as amended to be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay, then we've got Senate File 3275, Senator Anderson. Senator Anderson is going to the witness table. Senator Anderson moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I'll maybe wait just a moment. It's kind of loud. Mr. Chair, I would characterize this bill, I guess, Senate File 3275. I consider it my non-general fund finance bill. And I know you call these policy bills, and it really is a hybrid because it does have a lot of policy in it. But what we did was took a look at bills that had non-general fund implications and saved them for this bill. And then amendments come in, and whole bills that have some financial implications. So it is sort of a mixture. But I thought I would go through, I'll just tell you what the articles are. That's a very general look at it. And then I thought I would go through the spreadsheet and highlight the things that have a recognized fiscal impact on the spreadsheet, because there's lots of small policy items in here, and I doubt that you want me to go through those one by one, but I will leave it up to you, of course.
Well, if you could just give us a sense of the bill, the highlights of the bill.
Mm-hmm. So the first article is Clean Water Fund appropriations and changes, and as you all probably remember, we did a two-year bill last year with Clean Water Legacy Dollars, so this is just some tweaks and changes to and some small additions to appropriations, and I'll go through those in a little bit of detail when we go through the spreadsheet. Article 2 is the Environment and Natural Resources section, and that includes a lot of other bills are combined into this, including some DNR technical bill. We have Senator Chaudhry's. We have Senator Saxhog's bill for ski pass fee increases, which was requested by the cross-country skiers. We have a Senator Tom. No, that's in the energy section. We have a bill from Senator Scogin related to rulemaking for septics by counties and a delay in that requirement. There's a whole bunch of other bills that are incorporated into this, and I'll go through the ones with the fiscal impact. But this is the most lengthy and detailed article of the bill, and I'll get to that in a moment. Article 3 is the reorganization bill, and this is Senator Mary Olson's provision that proposes an advisory committee to look at reorganizing state agencies that relate to natural resources management. So that's a very broad, comprehensive proposal, which we have in Article 3. Article 4 is basically the lands bill. This is Senator Scogin's bill, and it has a number of sections, some of which have direct fiscal impacts. And Article 5 is energy. And so let me go through the spreadsheet, and I think hopefully that will lay out the highlights related to the financing in these different sections.
And, Senator Anderson, I know when we talked about this last night.
And I have some amendments.
We went through a lot of this. Mr. Mossman points out that Article 3 is not on the spreadsheet.
It's on the spreadsheet.
Oh, is it? No fiscal note. There's no fiscal note. I'm sorry.
We were waiting for that. Do we have that?
Mr. Chairman, it says blank on there right now. There will be an amendment coming that has an appropriation that we'll have to write a number in. It will be $30,000.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chair, I forgot, and I will get to that. I do have a number of amendments that I need to offer to get the bill in its shape I'd like to present to the committee. And based on our discussions last night, Mr. Chair, we went through the bill at length with Mr. Mossman and yourself, and I have some changes that I'd like to propose to the committee in light of that discussion as well as some technical changes. But if I could, I'll go through the spreadsheet and then talk about those amendments.
Sure.
So if you have the spreadsheet in front of you, I think this is the easiest way to go through the main points of the bill that relate to financing. The first article, as I mentioned, is the Clean Water Fund. Coal tar BMPs, this is an appropriation that we made last year that relates to cleaning up and runoff that goes into ponds that is very toxic, and we're just changing an existing appropriation here by designating a portion of it for a particular research project. I believe by the PCA, yes, by the PCA. So we're just tweaking an existing appropriation there, and that's the first two items listed. Then we have rulemaking for nitrate and nitrogen, and this is from Senator Rummel's Clean Water Fund bill. And this is, there's a couple of new appropriations that are, Senator Rummel, if you want to come sit up here, you're welcome to do that. Well, I guess we have a number of authors, so if you have, if there's questions, we can bring her up. We did spend a little bit of new money from the reserve, the Clean Water Fund reserve in this bill. And these are primarily one-time things that didn't quite get done last year or that are very timely. If you'll recall, we have a reserve in the Clean Water Fund, and we decided that it would be prudent to do a couple of more expenditures on critical issues, but to maintain a 5% reserve. And so that's what we present today, is to maintain a 5% reserve in the Clean Water Legacy Fund for the remainder of this biennium. So this is a new spending item, the rulemaking. The rulemaking is underway, but it's not funded, and so this will allow it to proceed in a more timely way.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, what is the 5% reserve? How much is that?
I forget. And it's changed a lot over the last year because of changed receipts from sales tax. Well, look, Mr. Mueller can tell it, figure that out.
Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, I think that leaves about $5 million in the fund yet. A little less than five. It's between four and five. It's a 5% of 1 year's revenues that's expected to come in.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, revenues continue to come in as the sales tax generates. So.
Correct.
So it's not a given 5% that's locked in, but it's continuing to grow.
Well, it's based on the forecasted amount for this year, for the remainder of this year, correct?
Yes.
That's what we're basing it on. So whatever, and the sales tax receipts were down because of the recession, but not as much as income tax receipts. So it did reduce our projected amount for revenue from the legacy funds, but not that much. So it did reduce the percent. I mean, it reduced the dollar amount that was in the reserve. Okay, so that's next is the Metro Groundwater Monitoring Act. And this $5 million, this shows up as a $5 million expense. And then in the next section under the Natural Resources Department, it's a $5 million appropriation. That's the same money. And basically, this is $5 million that last year in our Clean Water Legacy Bill we appropriated to the PCA, but we didn't really have a plan. We asked for a plan for groundwater monitoring and protection based on the constitutional amendment, which requires that we set aside some of the clean water money for groundwater, in particular, groundwater and drinking water. And so what we're doing this year is we have a plan now, and we're giving the money to the DNR to move forward with an 11-county metropolitan area groundwater monitoring plan. And this is an integrated groundwater monitoring network and data management system. Right now, we have very rough and inadequate information about our groundwater usage. In the major aquifers in the greater metropolitan area, at least 75% of the drinking water that all Minnesotans use, at least 75% of our drinking water comes from this 11-county area and its aquifers. So this is a critically important area for protection. We don't have adequate information. The $5 million is the first chunk of money that will be needed. It's going to take more than that over the next few years, and we'll talk about that fee in a moment, but it will set up a much higher tech real-time monitoring system so we can tell how much groundwater exists, where it is in the aquifers, and what the flow is based on usage, based on wells. It'll be real time, so we can get information to predict whether there will be shortages. And so it's going to provide us the information that we need about contamination and the sustainable use of groundwater into the future. So that's what that $5 million is. It's basically being transferred from one agency to another. And the language is in the bill. Next is under the DNR is to extend the LIDAR appropriation. And this, again, is an appropriation from last year. The LIDAR is high-resolution mapping of the surface of Minnesota to give us information about, you know, at a very close resolution for water planning. And this just extends that appropriation to a later date. Under the Metropolitan Council, this is clean water planning. This is another additional new appropriation, one of the ones I mentioned that we're taking out of reserve dollars. And this is just the second year. We already funded the first year last year, and we wanted to see some progress. So we're providing the second year now. And then finally, under Bowser, we have a small appropriation for the Star Lakes Board pilot program. And this is also a Senator Mary Olson proposal. We did some tweaks to it, and we're kind of reshaping it so that I think it will meet the muster of the agencies and the governor. It's basically going to be kind of a small grants program so that lakes and lake associations that want to access a very small grant to do some local work on their lakes and lake improvements and will be able to have access to a small grant program, and the Star Lakes Board will oversee that, and they will be overseen by Bowser. So it's sort of too small to be something that is cost-effective for the whole agency to do, but it needs oversight. So putting it with housing it within Bowser, I think, is a really good solution as a small grants proposal. So that's the clean water section, and we'll get to the fee in a few moments. The next article is environment and natural resources, and you'll see the first one is utility crossing fee waiver. And last year, one of the things in the governor's budget was that helped us get to our target was some fairly dramatic increases in fees that are charged when utility lines cross public lands, that are charged, the fees that are charged by the DNR for their role in managing that. Senator Skoy came to us with a bill to try to reduce or waive some of those fees, and there still shows a fiscal impact for the way that we basically reduced it, the fee, in our bill, and now I'm going to offer an amendment that will revise those fees in a slightly different way. We're trying to figure out how to meet the fiscal impact, but also reduce some of the hardship that some of the fees are causing, because we basically increased it by, it was a nine-fold increase in fees from $500 to $4,500 fee. So we're trying to find a way to modify it so for the smaller projects there won't be such a huge fee. So I will show you that amendment shortly. Okay, and then we have a couple of provisions relating to reoffering unsold lumber. This is from the DNR's bill, and this allows them to offer up for sales timber that didn't sell in the traditional sale and allow them to reoffer it and get at least some revenue back. And then we have appropriate the court surcharge, and this another governor's budget proposal that puts money back into the Game and Fish Fund for conservation officer training purposes. The Blue Earth Canoe Route is canoe route. I don't know which way to say that. My East and Coast and Midwestern routes are getting mixed up here. This is a Senator Rosen's proposal to establish a new canoe trail on the Blue Earth River out of the Natural Resources Fund. The Moose Trail is a reappropriation of some funding that was previously appropriated with the hopes that this trail will actually get done in the next year. The ecological classification system is another governor's proposal that was in his budget bill, and again, we put that in this bill because it was a Game and Fish proposal to do an ecological classification system for $250,000 from the Game and Fish Fund. We were lucky to find a balance in the Natural Resources Fund and the Lottery in Lieu accounts, which are specifically designated for the purpose of funding state parks and trails with lottery in lieu dollars that come from sales tax on lottery tickets. And so we were able to put a little bit of money back into the state and metro parks and trail systems. And that's the end of Article 2. Article 3, reorg, that's the one that you had already asked about. This is Mary Olson's bill, and I will be offering another amendment that puts in the $30,000 price for per diem only. And I guess I'll explain that when I get to the amendment in more detail.
Can I just ask a question about Article 3?
Sure.
So we're looking to potentially reorganize all of, bring everything into one agency? What?
No, there's no there's no preordained conclusion. Basically, the bill sets up a process to discuss how we can do a better job of managing our natural resources. And it's we started out by trying to list all the possible stakeholders, and that list was so long it would fill, you know, a football stadium. So we decided to make it a little simpler and create an advisory council, but just require them to consult with everyone who would be affected and with the different state agencies that would be that could potentially I'm looking for the list of the agencies. The different agencies that could potentially be affected by that relate to water and natural resource management. Senator Olson's here if you want more detail about that. But you can see on page 46, it lists the Department of Ag, Health, Commerce, Transportation.
And that was, and that was my question. So I don't know if this goes to Senator Olson. So has this been considered by Senator Vickerman's division, Senator Berglund's division, Senator Tomasoni's division, Senator Murphy's division? Have they all looked at it, or?
Senator Olson can answer. I know it's been to a number of committees.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Originally, this bill last year passed through the Environmental Policy and Budget Committees, and then this year it was heard in Senator Vickerman's Agricultural Committee, and then it went back again to Senator Anderson's committee. No one else from any of those other committees has actually asked for the bill, although I think some of the chairs may have heard it in one of those other committees. But as Senator Anderson mentioned, in Senator Vickerman's committee, what happened, well, and it also went to Senator Rust's committee. In Senator Vickerman's committee, there were 8, I believe, agricultural-related task force members or committee members that were added to the list of those who would be taking part in this conversation. And I don't know that you want to go into the whole policy rationale for the bill, but to the extent anyone wants to, I'd be very happy to discuss it. Then when it went to Senator Rust's committee, there were some concerns by other stakeholders that if those names were on the list, that they wanted to make sure they would also be included on the list, to the point that it got to, I think, a membership of around 30. And then after that point, I know before it went back to Senator Anderson's committee, I believe that she and her staff worked on and had some conversations with Senator Vickerman. I can't speak for Senator Vickerman in terms of how he feels about the bill in its present state, but I think the idea was to set up a stakeholder group to make sure all of those interests were heard and were included in the process without having them all a part of an entire large group. And I think the concern was that it would just get to be too cumbersome. I don't have, Mr. Chair, myself personally, any strong feelings about this one way or another other than I hope to be able to have as broad support as for the bill as possible, and I think you get that by being as inclusive as possible.
You know, it's possible it's more a consideration of this committee as opposed to outside the committee, but I know we always have difficulties with cross jurisdictions. So if we're going to, and Sir Berglund's not here, but if we were to take the Department of Health and some of the programs that might be considered to be under, you know, maybe more of an environmental purview than what we consider to be traditional health, and we take the jurisdictions for those programs and place them in some other umbrella organization, we should certainly make sure it's not just simply the issue, but you know, the money and everything else, to make sure we don't have some of the confusion, either outside this process, more importantly, or also within this process.
Well, Mr. Chair, one thing I think that often gets misunderstood about this bill is the idea that it preordains some type of a large super agency. The reason that all of these different departments and then some parts of the jurisdiction of other departments or boards are included in this process is because they have jurisdiction over an area that impacts natural resources and therefore should be at the table and make sure that their voices are being heard. If you're looking at ways to reduce redundancy, if you're looking at ways to make sure that your process is more effective because you're not siloing how you're handling a particular issue, for example, invasive species management is one that has come up a lot on things that I've worked on. If you're looking at ways to reduce permitting so that you're not overlapping the same responsibility in different agencies, then the idea is to have everyone at the table and make sure their voices are heard, but not necessarily to ordain that you're going to move anything away from an agency and put it into some big agency. It's hard to determine what the outcome may be without having gone through the process.
Okay, thanks. Senator Dill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm just wondering if this $30,000 is really enough to get a major job done, like reorganize all the environmental organizations that are part of state government. And before I re-entered the room here, an employee of the DNR, Bob Michaels, or Myers, indicated some concern about being able to accomplish such a major task with so little money. So I'm just wondering if we're talking about money in this committee, if we should have him make a comment or we should discuss whether $30,000 can get the job done.
Mr. Chair, I'll just address that briefly, and Mr. Mueller does have the fiscal note. I think what we decided in the end, because this affects so many different agencies, that it would be a small cost in terms of staff time for each of, I think, seven agencies, and we had heard a small dollar amount for each of them for the amount of $30,000 to $50,000 or something like that for each agency in staff time, as well as per diem costs for advisory task force members. And what I decided in this bill was to just fund the, or what I'm proposing today is just to fund the per diem costs so that public members do have the ability to be compensated for their time and travel, but to require that the agencies absorb those staff costs because of the budget situation we're in. I don't know if Mr. Mueller needs to add to that.
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, there is a preliminary fiscal note that was still being updated this morning, and I was trying to print it out actually right before here, and it's still in the preliminary stage, but what Senator Anderson just mentioned is the numbers that are current in the fiscal note so far. There's about seven agencies listed, and they had reported staff costs anywhere between $20,000 and $50,000, depending on the agency, that they would have to spend to participate in this task force. And then also there is a per diem cost that Senator Anderson mentioned that will be part of an amendment, and that per diem cost is $30,000. So
Mr. Mueller, is that $30,000 spread among the agencies, or?
What we have in the amendment is to propose taking it from the Environmental Fund and the Pollution Control Agency, just rather than splitting it into seven little pieces.
Well, there's just one general cautionary note, and this is separate from Senator Olson's proposal, but, you know, if we're going to start taking these bills, and because the finance bills, in this case, the supplemental finance bill is gone for these agencies, and suggest we have some additional responsibilities, and we're simply going to take it out of the budget of the agency, that they'll absorb the cost. You know, all of a sudden you're looking at some additional cuts to the agencies, and so we can certainly do that. But given where we're going with these agencies, it's kind of like in the governor's budget, and we didn't do this in the finance bill, but the governor proposed $9 million in additional unspecified budget cuts to the agencies as a way to come up with a number. And it never said where those budget cuts would be coming from.
Okay.
I think going into the conference committee, the House utilized $3 million of the $9 million as a way for them to get into the conference committee. And I certainly, when I was a division chair, I don't want to suggest that I was pure in this respect. There were times when it got to meet a budget number, and this was not, to get the bill to the full committee. And we'd do the arithmetic and come up X number of dollars short. We'd say, okay, we'll impose another 1% cut on all the agencies. When I was doing it, it probably wasn't the best practice, but it wasn't having some of the repercussions that would have now when we start doing this. So just kind of a cautionary note to all the division chairmen, if you're going to show up with these bills subsequent to the budget bills and we're going to fund, 30,000 here and 50,000 there, it's going to start to become onerous to the agencies.
I'm sorry.
Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, you're absolutely right. It creates a problem, but I also have to say in our defense, this is a new policy proposal, and we worked very hard not to put any policy into that budget bill, number one. So, number two, it hasn't been worked out because we tried so hard to get our budget passed before we finished our policy work. And so we're sort of in this conundrum,
and we have no
choice.
I agree. And,
understand that.
Maybe next time around, we should maybe take a look at the process internal to us. But if the end result of a process we've created internal to the Senate is that we start imposing some significant additional costs on the state agencies or local governments or whatever, because obviously next year is not going to get any easier in terms of budgeting. So I don't mean to pick on this bill as such, because it'll happen elsewhere, but I have to be careful. Senator Roebling?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I'm on the Legislative Audit Commission, and one of the things that we did approve for a program evaluation was the study of environmental permitting. And I know it was requested and was supported strongly by members of the legislature, and I don't know how that will tie into what you're trying to do here, but I don't know if they should be done simultaneously or if we should wait for recommendations from the Office of the Legislative Auditor, or how we should proceed, because I know it's an issue that's of concern to a lot of legislators.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, of course you're very correct. This is an area of concern that's been identified by a lot of legislators, I think because we've all heard from our constituents about this issue, and that's why this is one of a list of concerns related to natural resources management, and there are 10 actual concerns listed in the bill. And it isn't, I think the two actually work hand in hand, and the fact that the Legislative Auditor's Office is going to be looking very specifically at this issue is something that I would certainly expect that would be incorporated, that work, into this study, but it isn't the major emphasis of this study. It's one of the byproducts, I guess, if you could put it that way. So if you're looking at how to manage government more efficiently and more effectively, what the bill says is that's one of the things that's been, it's one of the things that's in the bill, because it's one of the things we've been hearing about that isn't managed as effectively as it could be. So that work will want to be incorporated into, I'm sure, looking at how we might redesign natural resources management, and I would think those two would very well work hand in hand.
Before, Senator Murphy, before I call on you, let me just offer a comment. I'll be very surprised if we get to the next two bills this morning. We're going to adjourn for the floor session at 11 o'clock. And just so members can plan ahead, because Senator Thomasoni and Senator Murphy had hoped to get to their bills this morning. Maybe I think we have 10 amendments to your bill, Senator Anderson, that we haven't taken up yet. we're going to try to schedule as many meetings as possible over the next 2 weeks to process not only these omnibus bills, but all the other bills in the committee. It's going to be a little bit awkward because for the first time we're going to have the state party conventions in the middle of the legislative session, and that's going to make for some difficulty. And it also takes away a couple of potential Saturday meetings. And it's possible the week after the DFL convention, if we haven't made good progress, maybe we'll spend the day here on Saturday trying to work through this. So, Sir Murphy?
Mr. Chairman, to that point, we have a job to do, and those conventions can wait, period.
Well,
they had no business schedule on them when they did, period. Mr. Chairman, here's my question. This provision that we're talking about, do we have a fiscal note on that?
Well, Mr. Mueller indicated that one's being prepared.
Let's move on. Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, there is a preliminary fiscal note that was still being worked out by finance yet this morning, and I was trying to print it out actually right before I ran up here. And like I just mentioned, there is a cost to each agency that's participating in this task force or study has reported a cost in a range from between $20,000 and $50,000 of staff time, one-time staff time, for their work on this task force. And there's also a per diem cost that Senator Anderson is going to be talking about in an amendment that will cover the non-public members.
Senator Betzel.
Just on scheduling, there's a very short floor session tomorrow. Otherwise, the day is free and Friday as well, too. So
No, we're hearing bills tomorrow.
Well, okay, I mean, there may be but as far as the floor session, we don't have to worry about that.
No, we're planning to meet on Friday. Okay. But I know Senator Berglund's division was meeting tomorrow, and I don't know if there was another division meeting. So, Senator Higgins, yeah. So, but we're going to meet on Friday.
Okay.
And probably, you know, the next two or three Fridays, I would guess.
Sure.
But I don't want to, because I have a lot of work to do on this, but I don't want to get caught up on the scheduling, but we're trying to take into account divisions that are meeting, floor sessions, and taking the extra time then to meet in committee. But that could run into evening meetings, potentially a Saturday meeting. And, Senator Murphy, I can't speak to your comment about the conventions. That's one that's beyond my control.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, could we let her get through the spreadsheet?
Yeah.
We haven't even got any answers on, so could we at least
I was about
get
to
that
go back
far?
To her.
So that
yeah.
if she's going to address it with amendments, we can be discussing it the particulars at that point.
That's about what it was to do, Senator Olson.
Mr.
Thank you.
Chair, thank you. I think I'll move on to Article 4, State Lands Bill. And this is Senator Scogin's bill, and there is, as you'll see here, a fiscal impact noted. And this goes back to the law that was passed or became effective in 2005, I believe, that required state agencies to sell land to help balance the budget. And for pretty obvious reasons, the Department of Natural Resources has borne a very large share of that expected money saving because they own a lot of land. Jen Olson put an amendment on the bill that is in here now that would remove the DNR from responsibility for that obligation. I do have an amendment that I'm going to propose that we take that out of the bill, but we'll get to that. Why don't we save that debate till we go through this, because it's something I do reluctantly, but we'll have to talk about that.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, on the selling of the state lands, how does that relate to the very bottom where it says revenues by fund, permanent school fund?
This is, Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, this would be a general fund implication, so I don't think it relates to that.
So we're not selling any of the school trust land?
No. Okay. No. And we still have a provision in law that says that DNR cannot be required to sell outdoor recreation land to meet this obligation, and that we intend to hold that requirement. All right, I'll get to that in a little bit with an amendment. If I could just get through the spreadsheet, then I have a number of amendments that are going to change some of these items in the bill. Article 5 relates to energy, and the biggest proposal in here comes from Senator Tomasoni's bill. We've done a great deal of work on putting together a very good project here that will use renewable development fund dollars, which are XL ratepayer funds, to provide solar rebates. And we have a handshake and a commitment from a company that will be, once this
goes into effect that will come to Minnesota and build a solar panel manufacturing plant, because these incentives will make it possible for them to come and make that investment and have a market for solar in Minnesota. So that's a very exciting project. We also have a small appropriation here for an energy study in the Twin Cities from the same fund. The next energy provision relates to the Public Utilities Commission. This comes from Senator Pretner Solon's bill, which is based on several years of concern that we've discussed in the Energy Committee and in my division as well, that relates to the understaffing at the Public Utilities Commission. And Senator Pretner Solon came forward with a bill to increase their staffing. The staffing is paid for by utility assessments. And so I also have an amendment that relates to this section that will kind of clarify how we're going to do the financing there. But this is, as far as I know, this is, I believe the utilities are in support of moving forward on this, because it's in everybody's interest to make sure that the Public Utilities Commission has adequate staff to do all the complicated things that we keep telling them to do. And again, it would be paid for through utility assessments. All right. Then we have the totals and the revenues. I'm just going to jump ahead and talk about some of the revenue items. We do have in the bill a groundwater monitoring fee. And I mentioned the $5 million that we're appropriating to the DNR to begin this 11-county groundwater monitoring comprehensive project. We had also, in Senator Rummel's bill, proposed a fee to provide some local match for that. I'm going to offer an amendment to take the fee out today. And I want to explain, well, I'll get to that in a little bit, too. Let me finish, and then I'll do my amendments, trying to be organized here. Utility crossing fee waiver, I mentioned that's Senator Scoy's proposal. We have an amendment to shift that around as well. Deposit of fees for state parks, and that's an issue that there may be an amendment on. I'm not sure. And this just relates to revenue that comes into state parks and where the money's deposited, which fund, and putting it back into a special parks fund or natural resources fund. Cross-country ski pass increase. I mentioned this was Senator Saxhog's bill, and this was requested by the cross-country ski clubs and associations. They wanted to raise the cross-country ski pass fee so that they could have some more money available for grooming and creating cross-country ski trails. So that there was broad support for that. And there's also Senator Pappas's provision in here that doesn't actually show up as a fiscal impact because it's small, but that will offer free cross-country ski passes to veterans. Disabled veterans? Veterans. Timber
Iraq
sales.
Iraq War veterans.
Pardon me?
Iraq War veterans.
Iraq War veterans, thank you. So it's a fairly narrow group. Timber sales authorizations, I mentioned this is allows the DNR to re-offer for sale some timber that hadn't been sold. And we can talk about how that works, the financing of that. Aquatic vegetation fee, this is Senator Rummel's bill that allows a reduction in the fee that's charged for very, very small ponds for aquatic vegetation removal. The lands bill has several different. Do you want to just explain what those are from the lands bill?
Mr. Chairman and members, on the lands bill, there is some revenues that are coming in, and sometimes I'm just putting these down here for informational purposes. May not necessarily get these revenues in the fiscal year 11 because the bill just authorizes the land to be sold. The fiscal note did show some revenues coming in. They go back into dedicated accounts, but these revenues may actually be spread out over a number of years depending on when the land sales happen and if they go through or not. It's the same thing with the timber sales authorization. These are revenues we would have probably incurred at some point anyways, but this allows the DNR to reoffer up some unsold timber, and some of that is on permanent school land, so there would be some revenues going into the permanent school fund. The other funds are the Forest Management Investment Account and a special revenue fund set up for covering other forest costs. But those revenues would have probably happened at some point down the road anyways. We're just tracking them here in fiscal year 11 to show that they are maybe coming in a little bit sooner.
And is this from the Hill Annex
mine. Oh,
so that's where it comes from.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Chair, what I'd like to do, I want to mention one other section of the bill that I don't have an amendment on right now, but we've talked about it in as something that potentially could be amended, and that's relates to the Hill Annex State Park, the Hill Annex Mine State Park, and well, it's a historic site, and the DNR. It's in Article 4, Section 3, and this is there's an existing law that says that if there's any mining work done on this site, the Historical Society has to be consulted, and there has to be a process working with the Historical Society because it is a historic site. The DNR asked for a waiver of that requirement, and that language is in the bill as of now. I've been a little frustrated. We've asked them to move forward with trying to negotiate an agreement, and I'm told that those discussions have taken place, that the Historical Society and the DNR have been talking about and put together a proposed memorandum of understanding or some sort of agreement that would lay out what steps could and could not be taken. It would, if that is signed, we would not need this language in here. That would meet the requirements of the law. And that's what I would like to see happen. Now, I'm told by the Historical Society that they have an agreement, but the commissioner doesn't want to sign it until we pass this law. Now, that's, to me, that's not good faith negotiating. So I want to see this agreement signed so we can remove this from the bill, and I intend to do that in the conference committee. And so I just want to put people on notice about that. All right, let me go back and offer some amendments, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson, before you do, I have a question about a section of the bill. You can answer this, or if Mr. Myers wants to answer it, but it's the first part of Article 2, where the, and I assume this is a DNR proposal.
Which one?
The Commission of Natural Resources may bill other governmental units, including tribal governments. I caught that in Section 1, and I realize it's also in Section 3 and 4, emphasis in other sections. I'm wondering what that's all about.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. The language that you find on the bottom of article or page 5, and it's similar language in Section 3 on page 7 and Section 4 on page 7 for fleet and facilities, came to us as a technical change from our internal audit staff. We're doing these activities right now to be an effective and efficient member of the state executive branch. A good example is we share trucks with MnDOT. Rather than the DNR have large trucks and MnDOT have large trucks, we utilize those services through interagency agreements. Red Lake Band, for example, we've done some engineering work for them in the past. We're trying to clarify that we have the ability to do this because we have been capturing those costs through interagency agreements. All this does is just makes that clear that we have that ability to do that, to capture our costs.
Mr. Meyer, that's not how I read this, because if you're doing it through the interagency agreements, that's fine. And as you suggest, you're doing it, you wouldn't need a statutory change. This is other governmental units, so that would mean Coochin County and Becker County and, you know, whatever other county or city. And so if we're talking about the ability to allow a state agency to unilaterally impose costs on other units of government, meaning local units of government, that suggests a much broader authority than we've given state agencies. And what concerns me about that, if we take it to a much higher level, I think it'd be a fair comment. I don't think Governor Pawlenty has ever addressed this frontally. And I don't say this in criticism of Governor Pawlenty. I think my sense, if you look at his budget and comments, he feels that we've gone too far as a state government in terms of this intersection with other levels of government. You know, his criticism of LGA, for instance. And it's not my point to get into a discussion of that. But that seems to be certainly a tone from the Pawlenty administration over these last 8 years. And you can certainly make a public policy argument for that. I would disagree with that, but you could make the public policy argument for that. But it seems to me this is kind of a backdoor way to, on one hand, suggest that we ought to cut off some of the funding for the local governments, but then we're going to impose costs on the governments where we've taken away some of the county aids, the LGA payments, and so on. So I don't know if this is what you intend, but when I look at the phrase other governmental units, that's what concerns me.
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Olson.
To that point, is there a definition of other governmental units? Because I know in some statutes, municipalities covers the whole umbrella of local, county, school district. Does this term apply to just state governments, governmental units?
No, it says other governmental units.
Well, Mr. Chairman, but where is that defined?
Mr. Watson?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I don't know. I would guess it is not defined.
Okay, well, Mr. Chairman, then
take a
I
look
think
in Chapter 84 definitions and see whether it is.
Maybe it could exclude that definition of municipalities that's in some other thing that was used kind of interestingly in a year or so ago.
Okay, but
to narrow that, because Mr. Chairman, I don't think that's the intent that I heard from DNR.
But
it's cross the state governmental units, or including tribal governments, but not meant to be dealing with local governments.
Well, Sarah Olson, if it's not meant to be dealing with school districts, counties, cities, then, as Mr. Meyer indicates, we don't need the language because they're already doing it.
Mr. Chair, I'm thinking about a state park that might have a visitor center. If a city wants to come and have an all-day retreat there for their staff, I would think they'd have to pay a fee for that facility, and that would be the expectation that has always been.
Yeah, I think interagency agreements also allow some back and forth with local governments, but I don't know if this opens. I don't know if there's a fiscal note attached to this. And Mr. Meyer, you're suggesting that this came from the internal audit? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members, the DNR houses, we employ several internal auditors because we have so many accounts and transactions that go on within the department per year. They review our authorities, what we do, and this was a suggestion just to clarify the work that we're doing, that we have that ability. If this language is taken out, we will still do that work. Our professional services that we offer, geographical information system specialists that we have, are in high demand from certain units of government. Soil water conservation districts, for example, want our planning and expertise, some of our engineering experience, our brush removal equipment, somebody, a city might want to take advantage of. In northern Minnesota, where we're trying to share fleets and be entrepreneurial across all units of government to be cost effective, we're doing that right now. This is clearly a technical change that just codifies our current actions into state statute. If the committee sees it as anything other than that, I apologize. And if it's deleted, we will continue doing these things. But we just clearly wanted to come back and clarify the statute. So that's all it's meant to be, Mr. Chair.
Well, and I'm not sure that there have been, because I had asked Mr. Mossman about this earlier, and I'm not sure that there, I think it's the first time we've heard this is coming from internal audit, which is helpful to know that that suggests more of a continuation of present practice than an expansion of that practice. So this is the first I've heard of the internal audit. All right. Well, I appreciate the explanation. Let me think about it.
Thank you.
And Senator Anderson.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why don't I offer some amendments here so we can – why don't I do the technical ones first? I've got the A8 amendment, which relates to the energy article.
That's okay. I just randomly
picked that one. Is it 11 or 12? 11. Okay. 11.
Sir
Metzen. Pre-session meeting now, so we're going to – Denny and I –
he tells me we're not going to finish.
Upstairs.
Well, we're happy to hear that.
Good luck. Was it a smart remark?
Happy to hear.
Oh, you were happy?
No, glad we're leaving.
That's not very nice. You're usually a nice boy.
All right. So we've had the amendment distributed. Thank you, Senator Metzen.
Mr. Chair.
The A8 amendment.
This simply changes. I mentioned the assessment to pay for staffing at the PUC, and this creates it in a special fund and allows the assessment to be up front, and it also codifies the rebate program that I had mentioned. So I believe these are really technical amendments. I would move the A8 amendment.
of Senator Anderson's motion, the A amendment, Chair Roebling.
I don't understand this at all.
Okay.
What is it for, and what
which
the A8?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I had talked about both of these items in the spreadsheet already. The supplemental staffing assessment is an additional amount of $800,000, which will be assessed to provide additional staff for the Public Utilities Commission, which is severely understaffed to meet their current required obligations under law. And that assessment is against electric utilities in the state. And gas utilities, all of them in the state chip into this fund, and I believe they're supportive, or there's certainly no opposition to this. There's no opposition to this proposal, and we just are creating a special funds. That's where the assessment will go to pay for the staffing. And then the second part is the rebate, the solar rebate program that I mentioned, and this is the language that we have in the bill already. It just codifies it in statute. So because it's going to be a five-year program, I believe, more than one biennium, so we wanted it to be codified.
And
these are also from the Renewable Development Fund, both of these expenditures. The solar one is from the Renewable Development Fund, which is just XL ratepayers. But that fund that's been collected for many, many years for renewable programs.
And Senator Anderson, I guess I'll ask, as I love to do, which is to argue against myself, you're appropriating money from the renewable account for 2014-2015, so going into not the next biennium but the subsequent biennium. We did that, in effect, in the conference committee with the contaminated landfill fund, which is a fund for 2020. But, like I said, arguing against myself, that it still is relatively unusual that we'd budget for a subsequent biennium. Not just the subsequent, but the biennium past the subsequent biennium.
Well, Mr. Chair, the bill, I mean, we could just leave it in, I think it's in session law in the bill. Is that how we have it in the bill itself? It's just that it's a five-year program. It's intended to do that. And the reason we thought it was important to put it into law is because, as I mentioned, we have a company that is planning to use this commitment to allow them to finance building a manufacturing plant in Minnesota. And so having it in statute makes that a little more financeable and more reliable, and establishes that the legislature is serious about this commitment.
Financeable?
Is
it a word?
That's not a verb? Sure it is. I mean, an adjective. Would that be an adjective? Yes. It allows them to secure financing. It makes it a more secure bet for the future. How's that?
All right, that's helpful. all right, we have Senator Anderson's motion on the A8 amendment. Is there further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
All right, Mr. Chair, the other technical amendment is, let's see, this one, right? Let's see, the A9 amendment. And, Mr. Chair, this one I'll wait till it's passed down. This relates to items I've already talked about and the reorganization piece of it. We have to fill in the blank. There's no number here. So we'll be filling in the number 30,000, and that would be the per diem that we had talked about for this advisory group, and that would come from the Environmental Fund, which is a pollution control agency fund. I'll wait till it's passed out, and then I can tell you exactly what the amendment does. Yeah, Mr. Chair, 1.3 and 1.4 of the amendment are really just technical. It's one relates to the groundwater appropriation. The second relates just some technical wording in the reorg section. And then the last section of the amendment, as I mentioned, on line 1.7, I'd like to insert 30,000 into that blank. 30,000. And that would be the per diem appropriation from the Environmental Fund to pay for the Senator Mary Olson's reorganization proposal.
Senator Barrasol?
I'd like to hear from PCA on this, as long as we're taking their money.
Well, Mr. Chair, I could point out that I protected millions and millions of dollars from this fund that the governor proposed cutting in his budget. And so we avoided cutting this fund in our budget. So it's a very small amount.
At the request from Senator Parasol, is there someone from the PCA who...
Jody Boyne with Pollution Control Agency. Have just been aware of this amendment. We do have concerns about taking money out of the Environment Fund. It is a fund that we tried to protect during the last round of the budget reduction. The agency did submit a fiscal note on this process. We would also have a difficult time absorbing those costs. Our costs would not be covered by this $30,000 that would be used for per diem. So absorbing the staff costs to participate in this forum as well as taking the money out of the Environment Fund is a challenge to the PCA.
Well, Mr. Chair, just to repeat, the governor's budget proposed cutting millions of dollars from this fund, and we did not do that because we thought it was inappropriate.
That's why it didn't get supported.
This is a very small amount, and I'd rather not take it from this fund, but we did put tremendous effort into protecting this fund in the budget as opposed to the recommendations from the administration. So I think this is appropriate.
All right. We have the A9 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion or further questions? Okay, if not, Senator Anderson, I assume you're moving the amendment?
I would move the amendment.
Senator Anderson moves the A9 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's see. I'd like to offer the A7 amendment, and this relates to Senator Skoy's bill on utility crossing fees. And I mentioned this earlier, that this is kind of a work in progress. I mentioned that we had the governor's budget last year proposed raising these fees dramatically. Senator Skoy came forward with a bill to reduce the fees because it's become problematic. And so we did reduce the fee in our bill, but that shows a fiscal impact. So what we're doing now in the A7 amendment is trying to sort of shift the fees so that they would not be put on very small utility projects, you know, one line that goes to one residence or a single small business, and that the fees would be loaded onto the bigger utility crossing projects. I think we need to keep working on this, and I know Senator Skoy and the DNR have been talking to try to find the exact right approach, and I think this is an improvement over what's in the bill. But we haven't had a chance to get a fiscal note on this idea, but I think we know that the current, what's in the bill right now that I'm presenting to you does have a fiscal impact. So I'd like to offer this as a way to help cure that problem. It's not general fund. The impact is not general fund. Either way. That's all they're doing. Senator Skoy had asked me to offer this amendment yesterday.
Good as anything.
Okay, further. Questions on the A7 amendment? Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Myers, you'd like to testify on that? Sure. Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, members of the record, again, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. We are working with the author on this language. We don't know what the fiscal note is on this. The original language in the bill, the fiscal note was estimated to be $122,000 reduction from these services. This is an area that within the governor's budget that was enacted with the legislature's help last session. We're looking at areas within the department where the general fund has been subsidizing commercial activity. We've identified several of those in lands and minerals and some of our other permitting processes that are out there. Currently, we're dealing with some aquatic plant management fees that are out there that are being subsidized by the government, by the general fund, some aquaculture fees that are there. We've been directed to capture our costs that are being subsidized by the general fund. This was an area where our work was for the utility companies was being funded for by the general fund. We switched to a fee for service. And now reducing these fees that we're charging will impact our ability to provide these services, ultimately resulting in probably layoffs within the Division of Lands and Minerals.
Mr. Chair,
Chair?
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, so Mr. Myers, the amendment, the A7 amendment, would mitigate some of that problem because it's just a waiver for residential properties and single small businesses. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, it will reduce the amount of revenue that we're bringing in to do these activities.
But, Mr. Chair, Mr. Myers, a whole lot less than what's currently in the bill. Correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator, we need to make that, we need to do that analysis. I can't tell you what the fiscal impact of this is right now.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, you're exactly right. That's our what we're trying to do because right now we've reduced the fee from $4,500 to $1,000 for every project, and that creates a big hole, and that's what we're trying to solve. And so this is an effort to try to target the fee reduction. So if it doesn't work, we'll give them a chance to figure, you know, to let us know what the impact will be, and we will continue to work on this, and we're all committed to doing that to make sure we can find a way to make it work.
Mr. Chair, I also need to make sure the committee is aware that there's a $500 application fee for these permits that are deposited into the general fund that the DNR does not receive. So not only this may have an impact to the department's bottom line, but also there may be a general fund impact as well. So we need to work on the fiscal note for this and come back and determine what those costs are.
This isn't the application fee. That's right.
Mr. Chair, I apologize. This is just a supplemental application fee. This is the first time we've seen this amendment, so we need to work on it, obviously, and determine what the costs will be and the impacts.
Okay. Let's go.
Well, Senator Anderson.
And Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is the perfect solution, so I'd like the committee to consider adopting this. I think it moves us more in the right direction, but we have to find out what the fiscal impact would be, and we'll continue to work with the department and Senator Skoy and see if we can find a resolution on this.
Senator Anderson, this will be the last action we take this morning, and so what I'd like to suggest, obviously we're not going to finish the bill, and you have a number of other amendments. I'd like to suggest to make sure before we, if we assume we pick up this bill again on Friday morning, that we try to have, and you and I had a chance to talk about this last night, that we try to have some answers to these questions, you know, before we consider the amendments and maybe share them with, you know, the appropriate agencies, you know, beforehand if there is that opportunity.
We'll do our very best, Mr. Chair, to do that.
Okay, on the A7 amendment, is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries, and I think we're under call right now. So we will meet again probably 8:30 Friday and probably go for several hours on Friday, would be my guess. Committee's adjourned.